Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Welcome back to Lost in the Static, everybody. I'm so happy you could join us again this week.
And we're going to be talking about role-playing this week, as I hinted at last week. But if you want to do a different kind of role-playing, where would people go to get certain objects for that kind of role-playing?
Well, you could get things like sexy nurse outfits, sexy teacher outfits, sexy stewardess outfits.
Stop saying sexy!
Sexy firefighter outfits.
Just tell them what they got to do.
Sexy kitty outfits. You can go to adamandeve.com. And when you're ready to check out and you've got whatever sexy blah outfit you want.
You can also get various insertable objects and objects you can insert into.
Right. And videos and all kinds of stuff. Even underwear and pajamas and like non-sexy stuff.
Did you say pajamas?
Stuff. Pajamas.
All right, fine, whatever. Well, go to adamandeve.com.
Yes, at the very end, use the promo code STATIC, S-T-A-T-I-C. And you get 50% off of a single item, free shipping in the United States, 3 free DVDs, and a mystery gift.
Now, let's switch to the next promo, which is one that fits this episode absolutely perfect. We're going to be talking about RPGs tonight. Now, if you want a cool RPG that is, it's systemless, you go to drivethroughrpg.com. Point of Insanity Studios has a systemless settings bundle. Ha! I said it!
Yes, you did. And actually, it's drivethroughstuff.com.
Drivethroughstuff, sorry.
Right.
And it's interesting how you don't need D&D, you don't need TSR, you don't need the Star Trek base system or whatever. That's the whole point of it being called a systemless bundle.
Setting, exactly. You can use whatever rule system you're interested in, and it can be enhanced by this bundle. And it's done by my friend Al down there in Appleton, Wisconsin. And
Point of Insanity Studios, as
Point
I said.
Point of Insanity Studios.
Which, by the way, I like that name a lot. Point of Insanity, it's a cool name.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. You'd get along with him quite well. But the deal is you can get this systemless settings bundle, let him know that we sent you, and you get a free light bulb joke. And we get a little...
That'll make more sense, if you actually do it.
Yeah, actually do it, trust me. And you can even ask him for 5 light bulb jokes. Because he can give, you ask him for 5, he'll give you 50.
So...
Well, the old joke is, how many satyrs does it take to screw in a light bulb? Shut up, Al. Just trust me.
Okay. Well, let's talk RPGs. Now, when I say role-playing games, as Scott just discovered right before the show, he was looking up something on RPGs. Now, there are two, when I say RPG or role-playing game, two different things come to mind, which really does bring you to which generation you are. You either come to like a Dungeons and Dragons, tabletop, and dice, or you come to
Super Nintendo
and PlayStation and that there are video games and what we call tabletop. We're not going to be talking about video games tonight, okay? I think we can agree on that
right.
That's not the RPGs we're interested in.
Right, we're going all tabletop all the time for this entire episode. By the way, I do want to apologize if you hear a little background noise. I do have the window of the studio open because the air in here is very stale and we need some fresh air. And so I have a cat very interested in all the birds outside and stuff, so I apologize, but trust me, we needed it.
So when I say role-playing game, keeping out the video game part, what comes to mind for you? What image is conjured up in your head?
Well, for me, my brain goes immediately back to high school.
For us is the 80s.
80s?
Well, yeah, 89.
80, we started in 89. That's the end of the 80s.
I was in high school in 89.
See, for me, when you mention high school, my brain goes back to the most glorious decade of all time as established in
the 80s.
Episode, the 90s.
Hey, we were freshmen in 89. That makes us 80s in high school.
No, the vast majority of our years were done in the 90s. We're 90s kids.
Nope.
Yep.
But continue.
But anyway, my brain goes back to the 90s because I don't think we started this until 1990, but a bunch of friends of mine and I used to meet at Greek's Pizzeria in the village in Muncie and spend hours. And Greeks loved it because we didn't, you know, I'll take a Coke and I get free refills and I'm going to be here for 8 hours. No, we would be like, well, we've downed one pizza and we're still hungry. Breadsticks, please. And, you know, we kept ordering food, but we would stay there for 4, 5, 6 hours at a time, well into the night.
What system? Just a original D&D?
Well, no, believe it or not, we didn't. We started out with advanced D&D.
Okay, I put regular D&D and advanced, because regular D&D technically didn't last all but that long.
This is advanced D&D. Advanced!
They're essentially the same fucking thing, Scott!
But nonetheless, we started out with the advanced D&D deal, and then we kind of created our own rules and went off on a tangent and got really into the game. And we went from the ancient, you know, the standard dungeon crawling.
Give me money. I need gold. You
know, dungeon crawling and loot and everything like that. And we, through telling the story, and this was one long contiguous story that went for, my God, at least 2 years. And we ended up in modern times. We went into the future. We came back to modern times. We went off book. It was D&D was just a launching platform. And then we, you know, wherever we were, you would do a little role play while you were at the student center and hanging out and do a little bit over lunchtime. And then after school, it would be the big meetup at Greeks. And we would spend a lot of time there and everything like that. And it was great fun. It was a great way to use your imagination, you know, and even on nights when I wasn't playing, when I was just there listening to people play and seeing exactly what happened and how the dice fell, I would have fun adding sound effects and stuff like that. For instance, I remember there was one instance where we, yeah, this ought to give you an idea of what the game was like. We had a barbarian and this little elfin princess, whatnot, stuck in an elevator that was falling through a very high building. And so the barbarian, being brilliant that he is, took his big-ass sword and stuck it through the elevator into the wall, which, of course,
snapped the sword,
slowed the elevator down to a point, and then right as the sword snapped, the elevator fell about 3 or 4 more feet onto the ground floor, but it was this barbarian's favorite sword. So I gave sound effects of the sword crunching through the wall, snapping, and then at the very end, I just went boom, boom, and you know, which is the simplest and stupidest thing in the world of this elevator coming to a stop and the doors opening,
right? Like
nothing happened.
Yeah.
But the table died, you know.
This is your floor, sir.
Yeah, you know, first floor, ladies' lingerie, blah, 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 you know. But just that simple, boom, boom, whoosh, and the table just erupted in laughter. And the guy that played the barbarian was nearly crying because he loved this weapon. It was some big-ass enchanted sword that had gotten him through fights and stuff like that. And he stupidly snapped it on the wall, trying to stop an elevator. So, yeah, that was that.
See, what this reminds me of, Scott, is Spoonie and Angry Joe playing D&D and then Joe just fucking losing his shit. What basically happened, Joe was fighting this big monster, and he got his kill stolen from him. And then this happened.
Your arrows strike Varaketh in the heart and the head. He barely has the time to gurgle out a death rattle before it is pitching backwards onto the ground, twitching twice and then laying still.
Well, fuck yeah, who's the ranger now? What?
What? Did you... You killed... What the fuck did you do that for?
I just fucking raped it!
We were fighting over here like men! You
saved Lord Vayne.
What? No, he didn't. No, get the fuck out of here. Stop touching his dead body. That shit is mine. Stop touching his dead body. That shit is mine.
Man Scorpion is dead. Killed by a kill ceiling punk.
Stop touching his body. That shit is mine.
Yeah. Oh, God.
That's the kind of shit that happens in RPG sessions. Yes. Sometimes a lucky roll of the dice can totally fuck up a DM's campaign, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because, little backstory before I finish that. I was never as much into the fantasy ones, okay, Scott? I was much more into the sci-fi ones. I played Star Wars, Star Trek, Star Frontiers. You know,
did you play any of the cyberpunk stuff?
Cyberpunk and Shadowrun. But oh, yeah. I played D&D, mainly Ravenloft, honestly. But not all that much. I was much more into the science fiction side. And I had a DM that would not go off rules, even if the roles allowed me to. Okay? Now, I don't know if this has changed, okay? The modern system, people might call me bullshit that that's not how this works. This is how it worked in 1991, okay? Actually, 1990. In Star Wars, only a Jedi can wield a lightsaber. That is explicitly stated in the rule book, okay?
Well, that's the way it was up until recent movies, yes.
I was fighting a Jedi. I was a human smuggler, okay? I got off a one in a million shot. I mean, like, I think it was 220-siders, so almost no chance of me killing this Jedi. And right. I got the lucky roll. Now, normally you can pillage the bodies and take all their stuff. I'm like, I'm taking his lightsaber. DM's like, no, you can't. You're not a Jedi. No, no, no. I'm allowed to pillage his body. If I kill a stormtrooper, I can take his blaster and armor. Why can't I take this Jedi's lightsaber? Because you're not a Jedi. No, I'm pillaging it. Yeah, I can't use it to block laser blasts and shit, but I can still take it and use it. He's like, no, you can't. I'm like, fuck you. We argued for almost an hour over the semantics of this. I'm like, no, I don't have to be a Jedi. If I fucking killed him, I get his fucking lightsaber. Where do you fall on that? Do you fall because the rule book said only Jedis? Because I don't think the rule book was meant you couldn't pillage a Jedi's. Okay. It was meant you can't, like, wield it as a Jedi.
See, there you go. What the rule book said, because I'm familiar with the Star Wars universe, again, because of that epic freaking game we brought in, Star Wars rules and shit. Trust me, it was awesome. I would say that you couldn't wield it, meaning you can't turn it on and it goes crazy and kills you.
Well, see, but, I just wanted to like use it to like cut through walls and shit.
Nope. You turn it on, it kills you because you can't wield it, but you can have it and you can put it on.
He wouldn't let me because I wasn't a Jedi.
See, I'd be like, you can take it, but if you ever turn it on, it fucking kills you instantly.
But now, do you think the DM was being a stickler and an asshole, or do you think he was trying to keep the game as level as possible, keeping out wild variables that he never planned for?
He was trying to keep it on track, and it's an old DM trick, and I'm familiar with it, trust me, because I've known DMs that are like, no, you can't do that. Well, I just did.
But I didn't plan. I ran into that in Aliens. We were playing the Leading Edge Aliens game once. We were a group of mercenaries, and we were trying to get the aliens for Weyland-Yutani without anyone else knowing. And we weren't supposed to know what we had captured, okay? So I'm talking on a vid screen after we captured the alien to someone at Weyland-Yutani, and clearly the DM had planned that the guy sees through my lying that we did not capture the alien because we were planning on selling it to somebody else, one of their competitors, okay? And taking, you know, kind of playing both sides against one another. It's the kind of way I play, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And he's like, you roll to see how much he believes you. I roll, he goes, he believes you. Shit! It turned out that his whole plan was that they send a hit squad after us because they see through the lie. And he's like, believes you. Like, fuck! That was a 1 in 20 shot! How did you... He's like, fuck you! He's like, you just fucked up the whole game!
I also love the ones... We have a rule in D&D. If you have an unexplored room behind a door that you have just unlocked, throw the bard in. If she lives, then you can...
See what happens.
Yeah, throw the bard in, see what happens. Well... In a 1 in a billion shot. I was playing with friends and my wife.
Sometimes 1 in a million shots happen in role-playing game. You get the lucky roll, man.
Exactly. I was playing with my wife and some friends. No, Al wasn't there, although I'll tell you about his DM style in a little bit. But basically, she was playing the bard, and she was playing the super slutty bard, as all good bards are.
Okay.
And we tossed her into her room and slammed the door behind her. And in...
Knock three times if you're still alive in 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. In, I think Dan rolled his 20-sider three or four times, and it came up correct every time. Dawn seduced the dragon that was in the room.
There's some interspecies shit.
And
I'm assuming her bard human, or...
Yeah, well, elven or human, one or the other, some half-elf or something like that. She never played quite completely human characters, but she had an enchanted lute. And thanks to her enchanted lute, she used music to...
soothe the beast.
To soothe the beast and seduce the dragon, and ended up... This dragon ended up following us around for the rest of the campaign. And all we had to do from that point on was, if we were being beat up on too badly, we'd just throw Dawn into the middle of it. And she'd get hit once, and the dragon would go just...
ballistic.
Fuck all crazy and kill everything in the room, you know, or kill everything in the vicinity.
Well, when it comes to a DM, what do you think is worse? And when I say bad in this next instance, I don't mean bad like they don't know what they're doing. I mean bad like maybe they didn't think something through. An asshole DM or a bad DM? What is worse? The examples I'll give you are like when we were playing D&D, it was, okay, we're in a plane. We can see for miles in every direction. So how did the giant dinosaur sneak up on us?
Yeah.
Like, you know, he just hadn't thought this through. Like, wait a minute. Yeah, there's nowhere for the dinosaur to have snuck up from. Just go with it. Or the asshole DM. Robotech, okay? To tie it back into last week. Now, you know, in Robotech, not all characters had, vehicle characters had hands, right?
Right.
Some had those big gun arms and shit.
Yep.
Everybody except one person was playing as a character that did not have hands. So my friend Jamie, as DM, he was fighting with this guy, just, you know, they were having a personality conflict. So he's like, you see a door in front of you. Someone with hands will have to open it. I have hands. I'll open it. Huge barrage of missiles kills him. You just go, that was a setup.
Mm-hmm.
That's an asshole DM. What's the difference between an asshole DM and just a bad DM?
Well, the asshole DM has... a definite end in sight and knows how he wants the game to end. And so he'll craft the enemies and the rules around to end the game the way he wants. The asshole DM cuts off the creative side of it.
The asshole DM is also the person that puts a trap every fucking 5 feet. So you have to walk poking your sword into the ground constantly, which is just annoying.
Right. The other type of DM that I can't stand is, number one, it's a role-playing game. Give me a chance to do some role-play. Give me a chance to do some acting.
Don't just have predetermined outcomes and let me roll. That's it.
Predetermined outcomes are a bad thing, and also nothing but... We have one DM that we don't allow him to DM anymore. Because it
there
was...
There are certain people that aren't cut out for it, man. Yeah, it's just the way
it was. You're here. Fight. Walk here. Fight. Walk here. Fight. Walk here, fight. There was no role play. It was just fighting. It was all fighting. And, you know, we'd be like, well, we want to negotiate with the enemy, blah, blah, blah. Well, he doesn't understand you.
You see, I had one time where we were playing Star Trek, classic Star Trek, the FASA.
Uh-huh.
And just a series of, you know, like how I got a couple of those lucky rolls.
Yes.
I got some bad luck always. At one oh, point,
yeah.
too.
Oh, yeah.
I got eaten by tribbles because no matter Ooh. What, I could not roll anything that helped me.
I hate it when that happens.
It's like, I'm a fucking Starfleet officer. How did I get consumed by tribbles? Well, six bad rolls in a row will do that to you.
Yes.
It's like, are you fucking kidding? At that point, that's when you're kind of hoping the DM will take a little bit of mercy and go, dude, you can step in at any time and have something, you know, stop this. You know I'm having a fuck-all stream of bad luck, but you're just being a prick at this point, you know?
Yeah. In the meantime, you've got the other Star Trek officer just kind of giggling in the corner.
They've all got their recorders out. This is going to look great on Federation Tube.
Exactly. Fed Tube.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But then you've also got ones that that really do take the game seriously. Sometimes they get a little too into it.
Yes.
DC Superheroes, we had a DM that was a little too into it. He would like spend all day making special props. And he burned this one note about five times. It was the Joker left, you know, or not the Joker, sorry, the Riddler left a note at a, like a scene that we had to deal with. And he wanted the prop of the partly burnt note. So he would write the note out and then burn it and quick put it out and whatnot. And he kept doing that over and over till it looked just right. You're like, you realize just explaining this to us would have been sufficient, right?
Yes.
You're getting a little too into
Let
this.
Let me use my imagination.
You're getting a little too into this, dude.
Now, you mentioned the second greatest decade in American history, the 80s.
The best.
We talked before about the Satanic Panic and about how role-playing games linked,
specifically D&D.
Specifically D&D linked into that. And let's take a minute, because you and I started playing coming out of that Satanic Panic,
I was aware of Dungeons and Dragons and the whole role-playing game thing in general, but I didn't start playing till the late 80s. Honestly, I watched the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon before I ever read one of the books.
Oh, me too.
You know, the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon was my introduction to that.
Yeah, the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon, and there were a couple of Dungeons and Dragons Choose Your Own Adventure books.
I had those.
Available.
Yes, I had those.
Available through Scholastic, which had the wonderful book fairs. And
yes.
I loved book fair day in school. But nonetheless.
Those all came to an end at my, this was in my son's era, the Scholastic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Those came to an end at my son's school because of Isaac Asimov's magazine that was offered through Scholastic. Well, Isaac Asimov's magazine doesn't censor. One of the stories had a sex scene in it.
Ooh, oops.
Inappropriate. Personally, it was actually quite a tasteful one, but Asimov's magazine got that killed at my son's school.
That's a shame. But nonetheless, you know, I do remember my parents being worried when I started playing. And they were worried
You're going to go satanic.
Well, not even satanic, but you remember this was at the time when you had those news stories of little Stevie Brown got so into his character that his character died and he committed suicide.
Oh, you mean the Rona Jaffe bullshit that
yes.
eventually became... You know what? We should have played the Mazes and Monsters fucking TV promo for my YouTube page right here. Because Mazes and Monsters, that did not help at all with the Satanic Panic or a regular kid just trying to get into D&D.
Right.
Thank you, young Tom Hanks.
Yes, Mazes and Monsters went... heard it quite a bit, but you know, again, that was based on a supposedly real news story.
No, it was not. It was almost 80% fictionalized. All that the real story that Rona Jaffe completely and utterly fabricated on top of was a mentally unstable kid who also played role-playing games, got lost in some steam tunnels, and then later committed suicide. None of the none of that had to do with the role-playing games. It had to do with his undiagnosed schizophrenia, and it just happened. Well, he plays D&D, so that's got to be the reason that he did it.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, to go off topic just for a second, like the Frederick Wortham scare of the 1950s with EC Comics and whatnot. Frederick Wortham was a child psychiatrist who saw almost every juvenile delinquent I deal with reads these comics. It's got to be the comics then that therefore are making them juvenile delinquents.
Right.
It's, you know, almost the definition of scapegoating.
Right.
And that's what Rona Jaffe got fucking famous for this because fucking hack. I'm sorry.
I
have issues with that shit.
I understand. But I remember this made playing D&D difficult for me.
Made it controversial.
It made it something that only geeks did and blah, blah, blah. But I remember my mom sitting me down and talking to me, you know, now you realize that you're just playing a character. And if that character dies, and I'd look at her and be like, I roll up a new one.
Well, but then you also had the similar, this controversy wasn't, it was at the same time, but it was still Satanic Panic, but it was unrelated to like the Rona Jaffe Mazes and Monsters stuff. Remember how I can't remember if it was the initial DM book for Advanced or for Dungeon. Remember, there was a character of the devil, and it used, like, historical devil kind of imagery.
Right.
And that was all controversial, and they had to pull all that shit out.
Yes.
And then reissue it. I actually found one of those at Half Price Books for $2 on clearance.
I hope you grabbed it.
I did. It was kind of beat up. It was clearly someone read this book a lot. This was from an up player. But I'm like, this has got the devil in it. Shit, yeah, I'm buying this. And, you know, that wasn't... Role-playing games had a lot of weird controversies. You remember the TMNT controversy?
No, what was that one?
The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles role-playing game, which was really cool, by the way. The controversy was from the first edition of the source book. It didn't go into detail, so we're not talking porn. It dealt with the sexuality and how these things would procreate and... You know,
what teenage part of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Well, no, not just the turtles, because you could be all types of different mutants, but
right.
Like how they would copulate, and it had a sexuality angle to it. Way too controversial. That got pulled out. All the sexuality stuff got pulled out for the second edition.
Which is a shame, because that means that it was actually holding closer to the original comic.
Yeah, but the cartoon was also out at that time, In pop culture, the turtles were a kid's thing, Scott.
Right, right.
In pop culture, they were for kids. And
now
sexual...
Michael Bay is bringing them back.
Shut up.
I'm so happy. It looks so good. I'd fuck. Anyway.
But you had that, and then you just had other weird little controversies where various role-playing games got pulled for reasons and re-edited. A lot of it. Not just D&D, but other fantasy ones got pulled for the just bullshit of the devil. Devil and Satanism. If you had anything, if you had a character that had a pentagram on them,
yeah.
Well, that controversial, gotta pull that.
And don't forget boobs.
Well, it's fantasy. Of course you're going to have boobies.
I realize that, but I remember quite a few books being pulled and the artwork redone. Kind of like what they did with Yu-Gi-Oh cards these days. And the re-edits between the Japanese market and the U.S. market.
I don't know the first thing about those.
Basically, they take out boobs. They take out very sexualized sides of the monsters and stuff like that. Don't worry about it.
Now, before we get into other role-playing stuff, do you consider tabletop, like we were talking about pen and paper role-playing, and board games as totally separate or not?
Not quite, because remember there was that time the one that everybody remembers that's almost kind of a role-playing slash board game hybrid was Fireball Island. But
yes, I remember that.
You remember Fireball Island?
But I never wanted one so bad. I never had one of those.
I never even had Mousetrap, and I always wanted, but anyway,
Fireball Island's way cooler.
Fireball Island is way cooler, but there was also, I can't remember the name of it, something Quest. I know you know about
it. Yeah, Hero Quest. I actually have two copies of this. We'll play the commercial, and then we'll talk about Hero Quest.
Hero Quest. Deep inside another dimension, face battling barbarians and evil magic on a quest for adventure in a maze of monsters. This is Hero Quest, the fantasy adventure game where winning means mastering the arts of combat.
I'll use my broadsword.
And magic.
Fire of wrath.
Discover traps and enemies. Uncover secret doors. Once you get into it, you'll never be the same. Hero Quest.
Now, Hero Quest was...
It was kind of a hybrid. It was a board game, but it was also a traditional RPG, pen and paper as well.
It was the board game, the board was never the same. It morphed. When they talked about discover secret doorways, that's because the doorway wasn't there.
This came with a shit ton of miniatures. Yep. You had altars and chairs and doors and all these different monsters. And, you know, what you would do is, where normally, like, you know, in a normal pen and paper, you'd be like, okay, you open the door and you see, it would be the DM would go, you open the door, and then he would place the room together. This is what you see.
Yes.
So in a way, it was sort of D&D for dummies. But in another way, it just helped visualize. Yes, it took some of the role playing out, but I don't know. I consider this an interesting hybrid of board games and RPGs.
It's a very interesting hybrid, and especially if you compare it to things like Warhammer 40K or the very, and I've seen some models put of this put together of people creating their own little battle zones in the tabletops and
if you walk into a Gnome Games, there's always those.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Miniatures and monsters and sets and stuff like that. The HeroQuest was almost a junior version of that stuff.
Yeah, and I bought this in 1991. I've still got my original, and then I found one at Goodwill. It's only missing like two or three pieces for a couple of bucks. There was no way I was passing on it.
Oh, yeah,
but before that, in 1980, we got this. And yes, people, you are about to hear Orson Welles pitching a role-playing board game.
Last night, I journeyed backwards in time to the medieval world of Dark Tower. In this amazing game, I had to find three keys, lay siege to the tower, and defeat the enemy within. Each move was a challenge. The computer kept track, giving me secret information, pictures, sounds, surprises. Then, ahead of my opponent, I made my move. The battle was joined.
And I was victorious. Dark Tower from MB Electronics.
Yes.
By the way, you find a complete one of those, you're going to be out about $600.
Yep.
Though that Dark Tower, it sold like shit. Because it was very expensive when it came out. So it sold like shit. So it is hard to find a complete one of those nowadays. That one, I'll admit, I don't have. I really, really would like one. Hint, hint, people. If anyone's got one, I wouldn't mind a Dark Tower.
Let's secure your house and a place to put it first, shall we?
Fair enough.
Okay.
But do you consider something like that? Like, I know you were unfamiliar with this one, but like what you saw in the commercial, was that kind of like the HeroQuest? It was sort of a meshing or role-playing for dummies?
Well, it's a similar, I mean, that's what I would, I hate to use this metaphor, but it's a gateway drug. I think that it's got simple enough rules that somebody who, because let's be honest, when you look at somebody's collection of D&D books and you see the player's handbook and the monster manual and all the compendiums to the monster manual and all the addendums and the rule changes and this and that and the other thing, it's an intimidating learning curve.
Yeah.
To get into it. And I think that games like this are, they're a way to go, okay, let's simplify.
Ease you in.
Yeah, let's simplify the rules and give this a try. But it's still engaging enough, or at least they both looked engaging enough that I think even seasoned D&D players would kind of get into it for a while.
Well, but then you also have something I hinted at before with the tabletop people. There are stereotypes about role players. Fat, taped up glasses, smelly, unkempt, awkward around women. Now, obviously, these are stereotypes for a reason. You and I have discussed it before. Stereotypes always have a basis in fact, don't they?
Yes, yes. And I've been to Gnome Games.
You walk into Gnome Games, that's the local game store here, and this is not a bitching at them, okay? Gnome Games,
I love Gnome Games.
All right? But you go in there, the very first thing that hits you is the smell.
Yes.
There is like six guys that are there every time you go in there.
Yep.
That just sit back there all day, no deodorant, just playing like Warhammer and these games and whatnot. And they are the stereotype. They're unkempt. They are unshaven. And I'm not talking about like the beard I've got. I mean, like, I have decided not to shave in 3 weeks because I'm that lazy, kind of scraggly, unshaven.
Yes.
They're constantly sweating. They stink. They're very fat. It is the stereotype.
Those
people are out there.
The Gnome Games that's near us, right over here. I actually have a line of credit with them right now because we did some trading and stuff like that, and I traded in some rare stuff. So I go in there and he's like, "What would you like?" And that.
Am I wrong that the BO is not the first thing that hits your senses?
He actually has put up signs and they've made a rule now.
Yes, I saw that sign. You must that? Wear deodorant.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You and, must and wear deodorant.
I've heard some people fought against that.
Yes.
How dare you tell me how to take care of myself? Well, then you go do it somewhere else.
Yeah, and that's also what he told people, because you have to remember this. My brain also goes back to the old role-playing store that was in Muncie called Wizard's Keep.
Okay, now, it's not a bad title.
Wizard's Keep was actually really cool because at the time when I was, it's moved since then, but it was in the village and it was around a corner and down some stairs and well hidden.
So it was basically a basement.
It was basically a basement. And he sold miniatures and swords and books and had Splatterhouse and the crossbow game from the 80s that I forget what it is, but nonetheless, he had some hard to find video games in the back. He had a risque pool or not pool, a pinball table and some other stuff. And he had the group of six guys there, and you would open that door and boom,
it would knock you on your ass.
But at the time, the people that were coming in and spending money and keeping Wizards Keep open all smelled like the six guys that were in there.
It's not like that anymore.
It's
and
not,
honestly, yeah. That is something that's intimidating to new people.
Yes. And that's why I actually, since Wizards Keep has moved in Muncie, because I did stop by there last time I was down that way, and it's become this family-friendly, well-lit, bright, decent place to go that doesn't smell like BO. Gnome Games, they've taken their regulars, and they respect their regulars.
They kind of put them in the back.
They put them in the back, in a back room that they can close off and ventilate well.
Now, the only problem I have with, like, Gnome Games and other, I think it was Chimera that I went to in Appleton,
Chimera,
mm-hmm. is, and again, this is not a complaint, like, you people are doing stupid business, just like this is something that keeps me away, is we only deal in new stuff. We don't deal in classic stuff. You know, we don't have anybody that traded in old out of print stuff. You're not going to find old Dragon magazines and stuff. As a role player who's not into the new stuff, that's what I'm looking for. The old stuff. I'm looking for an old 1987 Star Trek FOSSA book or something.
Well, that's...
You know, and so all the stores I've encountered are only, we only sell current stuff.
Which
my problem is I can get that anywhere.
I have got to get you to White Rabbit Books. We got to take a road trip to Muncie at some point.
All right.
That's just all to it, because you'll find everything you mentioned there. And you just tell Derek what you want, and he'll be like, yeah, it's up the stairs and around the corner, third shelf, fourth book over, you know.
Yeah, and see, that's whenever I go into there, you know, it'll be like, you got any old, you know, White Wolf magazines? No, man, we just got, you know, the new issue, and it's just... I don't like that we only sell new stuff.
But that depends entirely on the store, because there are role-playing game stores out there that do sell the old stuff, and there's a
just
lot
not
of
in
used,
this area.
There's a lot of used bookstores, especially if you go to college campuses. I don't know what it is about college campuses, but
because college students are, let's face it, a really big market for RPG players.
Exactly.
Let's face that.
But yeah, if you go to a lot of used bookstores, you have to do some hunting, but you can find it. And again, I have to take you to White Rabbit. Do you remember the Christmas gifts I brought you? The mm-hmm. the little film and the CED and the other stuff like that?
He bought me 3 pornos on 8mm.
Yep. Every single one of the things that I got you for Christmas all came from White Rabbit, and they were a tiny little sampling of... The collections he's got.
Okay.
So do me if you're listening and you're in Muncie or if you're a Ball State student or whatever, stop by White Rabbit Books in the village right next to Greek's Pizza down the street from the Empty Cup, and just say hi to Derek and tell him Scott sent you and strike up a conversation. Trust me, he could use the business. This is one of the places that I've seen last most of my life, and I want to see last for all of Derek's life. And maybe
which is a good goal.
Exactly.
I
support them like mad. So let's get back to role playing. I apologize.
Let's shift this. This will actually tie back into Al and the systemless stuff. Did you ever say, fuck it, I'm going to ignore the rules and just have fun, or use a system in a way it wasn't meant to be to mesh things together?
Well, like I said, that game that lasted for like 2 years We would occasionally look back to the rules to solve major disputes. But for the most part, for the actual role-playing, the books were closed. And we had the DM, and he would use his dice to help make decisions. But it was kind of up to him. He'd be like, all right, if I roll a blah, then you can do it, you know, or blah, or
well, because what
like
I'm
that.
Thinking of is, you're familiar with Rifts, the Rifts
yes.
series?
Yes, oh, yeah.
Which, you know, alternate dimensions and whatnot. Well, the group I was part of would use the Rifts to bring different systems together. Because I remember at one point, we were mutants from the TMNT world flying Veritex that were fighting dragons.
Sure.
Because we said, fuck it. We're just going balls out.
Yeah, you can do that with Rifts, and now you can do that with GURPS. And
GURPS.
GURPS, thank you. What the hell have I been smoking today? But yeah, you can do that with GURPS, and you can do that with things like Al's systemless settings. It's just, it's kind of going, here's a place. Here's a suggested set of rules for the place. Check this out.
And, I was talking about how I would play Aliens from Leading Edge. Now, maybe it's because they were such a short-lived company. Leading Edge didn't last very long. They put out the source book and like two modules and some pewter figures, and then something happened and they went bankrupt, okay? So there's not a whole lot of Aliens RPG material official. So we were using that. The DM couldn't find some information he wanted in the source book. Maybe it's because they went out too quick. So he just said, fuck it, I'm going to start using some cyberpunk rules. In fact, our character sheets were cyberpunk character sheets for the Aliens RPG.
Sure.
Because we just said, fuck it. Honestly, those two things, they snap together more easier than you'd think they would have, in all honesty.
Yeah, it makes sense to me, actually.
You know, Aliens and cyberpunk actually did snap together quite easy.
Makes perfect sense to me, actually.
I mean
it's a future dystopian world, so.
I mean, Al, at one point, one of the other player characters, he got too close to an alien when he shot it, and he got his arm and leg melted off, okay? So we went to a bootleg software dealer or hardware dealer and got him cybernetic arms and legs. But because we were using the cyberpunk rules, the DM's like, the cybernetic implants, because you are not rated for them, are slowly driving your character insane. We're like, that's kind of cool.
Sounds like Deus Ex Human
you know?
Revolution.
That, you know, you got so much cyber in you, your body is almost rejecting it. And we're like, that's really cool.
That sounds exactly like Deus Ex Human Revolution.
This was the 90s.
Yeah, I know, but rock on. but yeah, that was the fun of role-playing games. For me, it was never the rolling and fighting. You know, it was never the combat.
It was the decision-making, the fighting.
Not just the decision-making, but the ability to really immerse yourself into a character. And how many times did you catch yourself, let's say your character's name is Tony, and I realize that's a shitty name, but Tony it is. How many times did you go, I think I'm going to, well, Tony wouldn't really do that.
By the way, in Aliens, my character was named Araza.
Well, there you go.
That's a futuristic, cyberpunky, aliens-y kind of name, isn't
it? That's really close to rice in Spanish, but okay.
A-R-A-Z-A, Araza. or Araza.
Okay. which is a type of phone. by Motorola. It's a Motorola Razor. but anyway... but yeah, I mean, you would catch yourself going, oh, my character wouldn't do that. Or, you know, your friend would do something. We had.
Well, sometimes you get to play the opposite of what you would do. Like,
exactly.
Like in Aliens, like I said, I was playing both sides against one another and, you know, shit like that. You know me. That's not me. But I'm like, Araza, he'll do that.
Yeah. And we also had, as we got a little bit older and we were playing games, We had the drink rule. If you make a modern reference while you're playing, like, I don't know, at the time you're wandering through a dungeon and somebody starts speaking like a lolcat, you know, then you had to drink. And I got to tell you, there were nights when we were making references on purpose just to drink more. And drunk role-playing there's something fun to that too. I realize that's not really an area that you've ever done, but role playing with a bunch of drunks, when you take off the inhibitions while you're playing a different character, which also removes some inhibition because you can go, well, I wouldn't do that, but my character would. Crazy shit happens.
Well, what do you think about duplicity in both the game and in the real world? Because I wasn't playing this one. I was just an observer like you were on some of those. But one guy had decided that he wanted to betray everybody else. But obviously to set this up, that's not just something you can just do at on a random drop. So he met with the DM the day before and explained what he was going to do. So it sandbagged all the other characters. Is that right or not? That, you know, you're kind of meeting with the DM outside of the setting and going, no, I need you to help me do this.
This is,
or is that really, okay, now you're just kind of being a dickhole?
I don't like it. I mean, I know a lot of people play that way, and a lot of people, you know, you go to the DM and you go, I want you to craft the world so that
talk
this
about
can
preconceived
happen.
Notions.
Yeah. To me, that kills the idea of role play. And it's, to me, when I was DMing and stuff like that, and I wouldn't allow my friends to do that.
Because
they'd come and they'd talk to me, and I'd be like, well, we'll see.
Well, because I remember the guy who was playing the traitor, it was such a dick that he frustrated one of the other guys so badly. And how he played it out in the real world would have been funny in a sitcom. But basically, he was, you know, after he betrayed them all, the guy he was frustrating was like, I, you know, throw my axe in revenge. He rolls bad. It just misses the traitor's head and goes above him. And he just goes, ha ha, you missed. The other guy just gets up, throws the board up and stomps out of the room like, fuck you! Fuck you! You ever had that kind of shit happen where the player freaks the fuck out?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because
you can really work each other's nerves if you know how to, if you've been friends long enough, you know how to work each other's nerves.
And you can do that with any game. I don't care if it's Call of Duty Online and video game world. I don't care if it's tabletop. I don't care if it's chess. If you and I have been friends long enough that I know how to push your buttons and get you upset. And if we were role playing, you'd better damn well believe I'd use that to my advantage. Shitty thing to do. But it's the way you play the game sometimes.
I don't know, because you still need to remain friends after the game's over.
Nah, not if it means I don't win.
Rolling eyes.
But you know, that's going to happen no matter what game you're playing, and that's going to happen when you're in a relationship with someone as a friend or more or anything like that. You're going to push each other's buttons. It's part of game theory. It's just the way things work.
Well, I don't know if I agree that that's the way it should work.
I'm not saying that's the way it should work. I'm saying that's the way things work.
Well, we got about 10 minutes left. How do you think role-playing games have changed over the years? Because I've seen them, again, this is me, you know, hates everything new, blah, blah, blah. I've seen them get worse. For instance, the new D&D system that they came out with a couple of years ago, we were talking about D&D for dummies. That's what this is. The new system, from what I've seen, has been completely nerfed. It's been completely streamlined, so just anybody can pick it up, which on the surface is a good thing. Anybody can pick it up and play. But on the deeper level, long-time role players are going to go, but that's just it. Anybody can pick this up and play. It's lost all its nuance.
It's a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, yeah, and a lot of...
It has been nerfed, though, hasn't
it? A lot of games are going that way to where they're simplifying as much as possible. And that's what we're seeing D&D do. They're simplifying as much as possible. The nice thing is we still have the older versions, and when they came out with the new version, the older versions became available as PDFs online, so you can play for free.
Well,
but that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I have a nephew, a very young nephew. He's extremely smart, but he's not quite smart enough to pick up, say, version 2 or version 3 version 5, he can get his brain around and he can join in and play. I think this may seem a little weird, but I think as players develop, then they can move into the more complex and nuanced systems.
Well, I think D&D was completely destroyed when Wizards of the Coast bought it. As bad as TSR is, we could do a whole episode on all the dumb shit TSR has done over the years. Wizards of the Coast one-ups them on every level. I think Wizards of the Coast destroyed what Dungeons & Dragons really was. That's my opinion.
I think they've heard it. I don't think they've destroyed it, but I think they've heard it.
They want D&D to be so mainstream, they're willing to do anything to make it mainstream.
They want D&D to be Magic the Gathering.
Right, which is where they made all their money.
Right.
You know, but then you've got other things. This is a nitpick, okay? It's a pure nitpick. I'm sure you'll agree with me, but it is a nitpick. I can't stand the artwork on a lot of the new ones. Like Gamma World. Remember the 80s, the like 1987 Gamma World? That gorgeous, ultra-detailed, hyper-realistic cover painting and whatnot? Look at the Gamma World you can go get at Book World or Barnes & Noble, the new box set. It looks like anime threw up on a box. I'm like, what the fuck happened to the art?
Yeah, I think that's just because art style has changed, because if you go back to the version 1 or version 2 books for D&D way back when, and you look at the art style,
it's very late 70s.
It's extremely late 70s. It screams Conan. And that's not a bad thing. But it's very late 70s. It's very dated. And I think the art style has changed, and art in general has simplified somewhat, and we could do an entire episode on why that happened, but I don't have too many.
When I saw the new Gamma World, I was actually kind of appalled that is the new Gamma World art? Seriously?
Yeah, but I think still the spirit of role play is there. I think that the spirit of role playing, even though it's been simplified, even though the rules have been
nerfed,
mainstreamed or nerfed, I think the spirit is still there. And I do like that, and I encourage everyone to go off book, get off the rules.
You don't have to follow everything that's written.
Exactly.
You should use it as a guide.
Yes. That's what it's right in the title, Dungeon Master's Guide. It doesn't say Dungeon Masters absolutely must do this rule book or you're not really playing and you're a jerk. It's Dungeon Master's Guide.
I also want another complaint I have, the Marvel Superheroes game, the 80s version. I don't know if they've changed this or not. I don't know if it wasn't for nerfing, but they really did not understand power levels. They basically Captain America on the same strength level as the Hulk. And just as a comic fan and a role-playing game fan, I'm going, no, no, no. That's the kind of stuff where you go, okay, we go off book.
And I'm
sorry, the Hulk is a lot stronger than Captain America is.
And you know, one thing that we haven't really talked about that I'm really happy because it's full of smelly fat nerds that I hate is all the HeroClix players.
Oh, I never understood the HeroClix thing. I have a couple just because, oh, cool, Magneto figure for 5 cents at the comic book store or whatnot. I have a few. I don't get the HeroClix thing. I tried. I read the rules, and I'm just like, I don't, the appeal's not for, if you like it, fine. You like it.
No,
I don't.
If you like it, you're fat and smelly and nobody likes you and you're ugly. And I'm speaking directly to somebody in mind is what's going on.
Because fair enough.
They're a huge HeroClix fan. They're like, we want you to talk about HeroClix. And I don't know. I looked at it and I'm like you, and this isn't for me. This is not
my. If you like it, you like it.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't. And I do want to quick say, I think it's kind of a shame that Dragon and Dungeon aren't around anymore, because I really, really loved those magazines. But, you know, that magazines are on their way out. You know, we know that, but I really miss those magazines.
And the happy thing is you've got fan communities online, and you've got decent writers online, at least. And So yeah, I mean, there's a long, long future for role-playing games. They're not going anywhere, even if they get nerfed. So thanks a lot for joining us this week, and we will see you guys next week.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.
6.